didn't have to work. And then invariably, whatever you'd say, that was supposed to be your career. So if you wanted to fix old cars, then you're supposed to be an auto mechanic.
So what did you say?
I never had an answer. I guess that's why I'm working at Initech.
No, you're working at Initech because that question is bullshit to begin with. If everyone listened to her, there'd be no janitors because no one would clean up if they had $1 million.
If I had $1 million. If I had $1 million.
Talking about millions of dollars.
What would you do if you had $1 million?
I'll tell you what I'd do, man. Two chicks at the same time, man.
We're living in a material world and I am a material girl. Or boy.
Well, what about you now? What would you do?
Besides two chicks at the same time?
Oh, yeah.
Nothing.
Nothing, huh?
I would relax. I would sit on my ass all day. I would do nothing.
Well, you don't need $1 million to do nothing, man. Take a look at my cousin. He's broke. Don't do
if I had $1 million.
Hello, North Bay Stacks and Jacks. I'm Tom Howell. And Andrew on the board. We have S&P Futures up 9. We've got NASDAQ Futures up 135 following on the rally yesterday after the tame published CPI report, which probably is very short term. Because most of it was in energy, and I think they're already back up. So I think those things were taken maybe 3-4 weeks ago when we were had that pretty good dip, and the dip, I think, is gone. Do we have Professor Mike?
Yes, you do, Tom. Good morning.
How are you, bud?
Not too bad.
A lot to report, and next week you got to give us the full summation.
Oh, I have to?
Well, I mean, you brought us this far. You can't leave us one step out of Oregon on the Oregon Trail, you know.
Well, after the game is over, you know, who knows?
No, you got to talk about it for the next two decades, right?
Yeah, you're good about that, Tom.
Well, yeah,
right,
well,
about that.
You know, it's what did John Carmichael's column used to be, in the wake of the news? What our man Ricky, yesterday's producer, said, "Who do you like?" He goes, "I like Spain. I'm over France. I don't think they're that good." Well, there you go.
You're right. He should have been making the prediction. Did he bet on it, too, or not?
I don't think so.
Yeah.
But, I'll tell you the bet you could have made. Three White Sox All-Stars and one Cubs in the beginning of the year. I think you got some pretty good odds on that.
That's true.
We did a little bit of research. Jimmy did, finally. And who exactly the target audience is for these things? Because I asked him, "Hey, if you actually showed up here at the beginning of the thing and followed your team to the end, what kind of abuse did you take essentially, and how much would it have cost?" And he spent a little time on it. He had the worst route were the British. You would have gone 20,000 miles to see every game.
Yeah, they've had, they played in Miami, and I think they played out west, too. I'm not sure why they ended up doing what they did, so.
Thought he said Spain was like
14. For somebody, though.
Yeah.
It is, for all those wealthy Brits that can travel around, right?
Well, I mean, I was just wondering, who do they think they're, I don't know, who knows what the guys from FIFA think, but. I mean, who do they think, like, their audience is? I mean, Jimmy said that the guys from Scotland, they sort of hunkered down in Provincetown or Boston, depending on how much money he had. So, for the first three games, I think they were New York, Boston, and Montreal or something.
Yeah, they were on the East. They were on the in the upper Northeast. They might have been in Philly one game, too. I don't know.
Because that was, you know, pretty much you can rent a car and you can drive. And, you know, it was definitely doable. And then now they expect the people to come from the first three games. If their team makes it, they expect those people to stay, to go home and come back. I know that the ticket price.
I don't know how they think. I just looked at the tickets for the game on Sunday, and that was 2 days ago. And the cheapest tickets for that game at that point were $6,800, and they were up in the. And that was per ticket. And some of the tickets were going for $13, $14. And I'm sure they're more than that, the good box seats. So,
well, the allegedly, and again, I just read this, when all three host teams were out, especially the U.S., the ticket prices dropped. Or did that did they stay dropped or did they come back up? Sounds like they came back up.
I think they've come back up because, you know, in the Final Four, you had the top four rated teams in the world. So, you know, Argentina is still number one. France was number two. Spain was three. And England is four. So, I mean, they did a good job seeding the teams, obviously. And they ended up with a final that they wanted. I don't think they got the result they wanted when the French lost. But the Spanish team is very good. And I can't believe how well they handled. I think Mbappe had a bad day. Dembélé didn't have a great day. Their playmaker was taken out a little early, but that was kind of their pattern with him. So the French did not perform as expected, and I want to see the game today between England and Argentina. That's a great matchup, and we'll see how England does. Bellingham and Harry Kane are keeping them in these games, and it could be very interesting against Argentina. I would love to root for England, but I don't think they have a chance. But I wouldn't. I knew that the Spanish had beat the French last year in the Euro Cup, or not the Euro Cup. It was some other tournament. It was a national tournament. And they beat them either one or two, but they held them pretty scoreless. But I thought Mbappe was injured then, and he obviously did not have his best game yesterday. So,
Mike, the one you're talking about a year ago, I'm still mystified as to kind of where all these guys come from, because then there's the U.S. team that plays between World Cup, then there's the Olympic team, then there's the World Cup team. Would what percentage of the players playing today were on the field in the game a year ago for both teams? It would be.
I think it would be about a 90%, because they're country teams, Tom. So
okay.
that would have been and that Yamal guy, the young kid for Spain, he's been playing, I think, since he was 15 or 16 in the pros. So he had a very good game yesterday. He's the one that they called the penalty on when he tried to attack the French, and it was a bad tackle, and that's how they got the first goal, the penalty kick. And then the second goal early in the second half kind of clinched it for the Spanish, because they play a good defensive game. They can hold the ball. And that second goal gave them the opportunity to hold the ball.
Well, the third goal that got called back, the guy was offside by like an inch.
Right. Well, but they've been calling the offsides very tightly.
It almost seemed to me like the defensive guy leaned forward to get the call.
Yeah. Who knows, Tom?
But yeah.
Jean seemed to think that FIFA, and I would agree with her, that FIFA really wanted a final between France and Argentina, and now it's not going to happen.
Well, is there?
You could have a final between two Spanish-speaking nations, and that's really that's a lot of the audience for this are Spanish-speaking nations.
Well, with the, what would be the difference in money in France and Spain? I got to believe the population is. Watching the TV, I don't know. I think France would probably be a little more money, but is it that much more? It's not like it's in Morocco.
France and Spain are pretty equal, to my knowledge. I think there's probably more people in Spain that would have been watching the game. I don't know whether you looked at, they were panning some of the audiences in Madrid. I'm sure all over Spain it was just like that.
But it's not like they're playing Ghana or someplace. They're somewhat similar.
No, and it's a big rivalry between the two of them. So, because Spain won the Euro Cup 2 years ago. They have the Euro Cup, and that's essentially the European teams playing each other, and that's every 4 years also. But it's normally almost in the Olympic years. But I might be wrong. No, I'm wrong about that. That's not true.
Olympic year is this year.
Yeah, no, it's in 2028.
Okay, all right. Well, that's right, that's right. But it's probably every 2 years. And then all these guys, all these professional leagues are all off for this time every
that's
year.
That's correct. That it's this traditional summer recess, let's put it that way.
And that's when all this other stuff takes place. But these guys have played a whole bunch of games. I mean, God.
Oh, yeah, and it'll affect the club season. The beginning of the club season will be, I would say, rather weak because teams will be recovering. And they don't really, well, if they start out hot, it's great. But the club game, the club tournaments and the club games all kind of peak in April, May timeframe. The big games are then.
Well, the goalie yesterday set maybe a new record between writhing on the ground like he's dead and bitching at the referee 40 seconds later.
Right. Yeah, he...
Of course, he did get whacked in the head.
Well, yeah, but he was whacked in the head with the ball, so...
Yeah, I want to defend that to a point, too, because, you know, one of the things you have to deal with, you know, do they over-embellish? I think so. But... But if you don't go down on the ground and stay down, then they're going to say play on. And you know, if you've taken a hit of any kind, you're taking hits from, you know, world class athletes. It doesn't feel good. It doesn't feel good when you get one in the shins and all that. And your alternative is to sub out. And if you sub out, you can't come back in. So you have to block off some time. You have to take some time just to, you know, just to give yourself a minute or two to recover. And so I'll defend it to a point. I think it's overdone, but I will defend it to that extent.
Well, I would agree with you on the one thing, Kevin, after playing basketball for way too long, a knee-on-knee contact, if it gets you right where the side of the kneecap, you feel like you're never going to walk again, and a couple minutes later you're okay. And that you know, I thought when the guy got hit with the ball in the head, I thought the guy lost an eye or something. I was really worried about him. All of a sudden, there he is pitching at the guy. Okay, then.
but you know, you have no other recourse. If you need a minute, you can't just look at the ref and say, give me a minute, because they do that. So, you know, your alternative is sub out and never come back, and you can't do that. You don't want to do that either. So,
well, you get if the guys come out and look at you.
Stay down becomes your tactic.
Well, not really. If the guys come out and look at you, they get to haul you off the field.
That's part of it, yeah. But that is part of it.
But, I mean, once they haul you off the field and give you attention, you can't come back for a minute, right?
That's correct, with the exception of the goalkeeper, I think. He can stay in the game.
Does everybody have I'm sure you got somebody, but is the sub goalie, does he ever expect to get in the game or no? I mean, is he...
Oh, yeah, it's happened, and it's happened... in this tournament, they've subbed the goalie out a couple times, the goalkeeper.
Okay.
The French kind of remind me of that classic team that's really good, and they think they can turn it. They thought they could turn it on whenever they needed to.
Large Argentina,
Kevin. Yesterday they really didn't have it, and the Spanish team is very good on defense too. So
yeah, and they found out. Yeah, okay. Now, you know, down one, we'll get it. Yeah. Oh, shit, we're down two.
Yeah, one day, one kid, that young kid's really fast.
He sure is. That's Lamine Yamal.
And he's only 18?
He might be turning 19 soon, but I think he is only 18.
Well, he looks like he'll be around for a while.
Oh, he will be. He, he's the next Ronaldo, let's put it that way.
Was Ronaldo? What happened to him? He lost, right?
Yeah, Portugal lost, and they're obviously out of the tournament. And he's retiring from the World Cup, and this will be Messi's last World Cup, I think. Who knows?
Well, unless he goes with a full body stem cell or something.
Right. Exactly.
I bet those guys are doing a lot of that. Why wouldn't you be?
I'm sure they do some of it. You're probably correct.
One of my
full body stem cell.
We could use that. You know,
I don't think it would work on you, Tom.
It might. Why not? Plus, if you get a nice trip to Bologna.
Oh, you're too old at this point. Too decrepit.
Lost cause.
Aren't we the same age?
I don't know.
Well, there's age and there's degree of decrepit.
That's so true. Well, one of my clients, who's pretty much involved in a lot of the, shall we say, startup, they like to invest in startup medical stuff. He claims that the reason why the NFL quarterbacks have been, you know, all of a sudden pitching balls into their 40s as they're all over in Europe getting shoulder stem cell stuff in the offseason.
Well, that could very well be.
Why not? I mean, what the hell? I guess the reason why you go to Europe is because they can still use cord blood. Can't do that here. So yeah, the treatments are better, just so you know.
Oh, thank you, Tom. I appreciate that.
So where do we, in terms of, how would you, next week we'll review the final, but how do you think everybody feels about the 48 teams, Mike, the extra game? I mean, is this coming down?
They like the extra game because it opened up the sport a little more.
What's the final mental tally on how many games were, you know, kind of one-sided early on? Nobody cares about that. I mean, you know, this NCAA the same way. I mean, but there comes a point, I guess. I don't think the NCAA would like to go another game where you have guys really whomping on people. I mean, is this about as far as they're going to go, you think?
They just expanded the field, so.
Well, I mean, they're not going to go to a 128 game, you know, type of thing.
They're not far from it.
Well,
I mean, 128 was just one more round.
Well, they're in kind of the.
They did add an extra round. It's just not a full extra round.
I mean, you really don't want. I mean, maybe you do. Maybe you want Michigan playing, you know, University of Chicago. I don't know what that gets you, but what you're talking about, Kevin, I think, is the way the NCAA has so many teams that get in there for reasons of conference and so forth. You really could have the 30th team in the country not make it, which is a little weird. I mean, I'm not saying it's wrong. It's just, so what they did is they expanded some of the play-in games, right?
Well, yeah. So there's more rounds. They're not there's nobody extra being left out. But it's been that way for a long time in the field of 64. You know, call it 68 because of the play-ins and all of that. There are a bunch of automatic qualifiers from low-level conferences. So what you're really talking about is somewhere in the 45 to 48 teams is the best teams in the country that that get invited in, and then the rest are filled by cannon fodder.
Well, but you could have, you know, 8 more play-in games, which would be 16 more teams, and there would be an extra game for them, but not an extra game for the tournament.
Correct. Well, there's going to be a second play. You know, they've always done the play-ins in Dayton. Now there's going to be a second site. I forget where they said it's going to be.
Okay. I didn't know they all did them in one spot, but they did.
Oh, yeah, they've always held them in Dayton. Yeah.
What do you think of, what's the view on the 20,000 miles if you're a fan? Deal with it if you're a fan, or they think it was too spread out, or not?
No, I think it's deal with it if you're a fan, because the brackets have to be kind of, they're seeded brackets just as the NCAA uses. And I probably think that the FIFA will expand it another, so they did 16 teams this time. I bet you they'll go another 16 teams within the next 5 years.
Well, I just, the only thing I would question, and, you know, the answer would probably be no. I think if you care about the fans at all, the first three games should be somewhat in proximity. I mean, didn't some teams have to travel, you know, Seattle, Mexico, and L.A. for their three teams or something?
That's right. There was, and even the U.S. Contingent, you know, L.A., Seattle, and then the San Francisco area. So, but that's still a pretty good distance between all those three sites. So.
But you could drive. You're not going to rent a car in Mexico City to go to SoFi and then Atlanta.
No, you could drive. But I don't think I would be driving internationally.
Well, that's what I'm saying. I'm not going to rent a car in Mexico City and try and fight my way out of the place.
Right.
How easy is it to drive in Mexico? I have no idea.
I am not sure, Tom. I haven't ever done it. So I would be very reluctant to do something like that.
Yeah, I might too. I wonder if it's, I mean, Mexico City to San Diego, you think if there was a route, that would be the one, probably.
Well, but the problem is there's a lot of crime, you know, but there's bad guys everywhere near the border between Mexico and the United States, regardless of whether it's California, Texas, New Mexico, whatever.
You probably wouldn't want a flat tire.
Nope, not at all. And that's probably what they would do. That's how it could start. Or they might just have mandatory cartel checkpoints, for all that matters.
Well, so when this is all over, does FIFA have some kind of a review? Do you think they're...
I'm sure they have some sort of a hot wash or a review. And, you know, the Olympics have done combined, you know, countries... The Olympics did it in South Korea and Japan. I don't know if they've done it. They might have done it in other places. And the FIFA, I thought, you know, South Africa was the first African nation to get it. And then Morocco is the next time. They host next time. So I'm not sure about how the stadiums are in the third world countries. I don't think they're all that great. I know South Africa put a lot of money into theirs. Qatar put a lot of money into theirs. I'm sure Morocco will have to do the same thing.
Isn't Morocco sharing with Spain and Portugal?
I don't know about that, Tom.
But that's what I heard yesterday, so I don't know.
Well, that kind of makes sense because they're relatively close together, and you can actually travel by boat from both Spain and Portugal to Morocco. So,
well, I mean, if we say it stays at 48 teams, I mean, who exactly, how many countries in any one spot have enough fields and resources if you're going to do it in one spot? I mean, I don't know where could you do it?
Well, I think France and Germany are fine with that. England's done it before. They could do it in a lot of... China probably would be okay, although China's got to make it. Well, but the host company gets an automatic invitation, or host countries get automatic invitations. So.
Well, if you were going to... Instead of going from city to city to city like they did, if you were going to host it in, say, L.A., How many fields would you need? You need SoFi, you need the Coliseum. I mean, would you need five, four?
No, I think you'd need more than that. The first round, you got me on all that stuff. I have the paperwork here, but you're asking too speculative a question.
All right. I'm just saying, well, you know, what does it really take? I mean, I guess...
Well, South Africa did it, okay? And they it was self-contained in South Africa. Qatar did it, and it was self-contained. That's a small country. And they managed to pull it off also. So
that was with 32, though, right?
Yes, that was with 32. Both of those were with 32.
Well, I'm trying to anticipate, what if they go to 64, boy, you need a lot.
Yeah, you would need a lot. And maybe that's the way of the future is the combined countries doing it.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know why not. I mean, what the heck? Everybody's a fan. I mean, would you... I would think that even though people travel... that most of the ticket sales have to come from the people in the place, right? I mean,
I don't think so. There's been a lot of foreign fans at all these venues.
Well, the final game, let's say it's Spain and Argentina. How many people in the stadium do you think are going to be from here? I would think half, but I don't. I would say
about half. I think you're probably right.
And the FIFA guys always look like they're pretty fat and happy.
Oh, yeah, I'm telling you, that's a great gig.
Well, it sounds like they must have some retired Army guys on there. Maybe you could hire pilot.
I don't think so. They had a lot of retired soccer greats other than that. And, you know, and I think it's up to the nation as to how they divvy up the tickets. Like they showed, you know, the old Argentina crowd and the old Spanish crowd, and it was mostly stars from Spain or Argentina or France, whatever, and then the fat cats from FIFA. So,
yeah, the old stars are all over the place. They all look good too.
Yeah, they don't look too bad.
Kevin, you got any questions? You've been quiet. I've been talking too much.
No, well, no, not really. I had been thinking about that. The comment I made about flopping and sort of my interpretation of it, and so I did get that point in, but you know, otherwise it's been pretty good. It's been pretty damned entertaining. I don't follow closely. I don't follow soccer, but I, you know, this is in many ways, this is like you know, I'll be watching the British Open, which is really great because you can get up and have your breakfast and watch them, and that starts today. In fact, I should have it on the background right now, but I don't.
The Open, yes,
I understand that. But my point is, I get the big events, these major events, and the caliber of play and all that. It is really awesome, and it's something to see. Speaking of something to see, I'm not a fan of the All-Star Weekend Home Run Derby, or very much about the All-Star Game. Nice job by the National League yesterday. Way to get two hits in the game, but. My daughter has sort of newly latched on to baseball this year, and really gotten into it. And so, you know, seizing the moment to, you know, because there are in many cases dads who are totally, you know, have comparable interests to what their daughters are, but. You know, I haven't always, and Amy has really gotten into a lot of different sports, very much so into Notre Dame sports now. But she really picked up on baseball, so I said, let's watch the Home Run Derby. I mean, she's got a Netflix membership, so we watched it. That, I don't know if you know what happened in it, but...
How would I know? I don't have Netflix.
Well, because you could hear about it, you could read about it. But the way they changed the rules this year,
they change them every year.
No, they don't.
Well,
but they changed the rules this year to try and make it better. And I think it probably is, because I've always thought it's just a stupid contest. It was on a timer before. Now you get in the first round, you get 20 swings. That's it. But if you hit a home run on your 20th swing, you can keep swinging until you don't hit a home run. The second round is 15 and the third round is 15 swings. So they get to the third round, and it's Jordan Walker of the Cardinals and Kyle Schwarber. And Schwarber went out and just had a really big round out of his 15 swings. And I think he hit a home run on the last ball. I can't remember if he hit an extra one. And so they get to Jordan Walker, and he gets to the last ball, and he's like down two home runs, maybe even three. And then he hit a home run on the last ball, and then he hit another, and then he hit another, and then he hit another, and he didn't stop until he won the contest.
That's unreal.
It was pretty awesome.
Well, Kevin, I think they have gone from amount of swings to timing and back to swing, so it's changed a few times.
Whatever they did, it was actually, you know, the first couple rounds were kind of boring, but, you know, amusing. But that last round was, and it didn't take long because they only have 15 swings, and it was actually pretty awesome.
Well, I've gotten this grumpy old guy view that if they don't want me to watch it, I just totally ignore it. I mean, it's like it didn't happen, the Home Run Derby. I mean, the idea that that's on Netflix is so un-American to me. By the way, I forgot to ask you, what was it like a week ago Sunday where the entire Sunday of baseball was on Peacock?
Yeah, didn't watch it.
Same, neither did I. By the way, I went to when the last All-Star game was at Sox Park. It was funny as hell. Mike, you'll love this. Larry's got box seats, right? So he gets the season ticket. So we're on, like, you know, they're the 10th row, so we're in pretty good seats, and we're watching. But if you're a cool guy, you're on the field. There's all kinds of people winding around the field, you know. So even though we had good seats and thought we were somewhat cool, we weren't cool at all. If you were cool, you were on the field. So remember Ginny Finch? That name ring a bell?
Yeah,
the softball pitcher.
Yeah, and she's drop dead gorgeous. What, she's like 6'2", legs up to her eyeballs, it seemed. She was trying to break into being a reporter. And you could tell it was like her first gig, and she was all excited. They gave her like three questions to ask. They must have told her, do not go off script. So she'd find somebody, and you could see her in the crowd. You'd pick her out, even though so many people down there. And she'd interview them. And one of the questions was, what do you think about your first All-Star experience? Because she's supposed to be interviewing the people in the contest. Well, she comes across Peyton Manning. And, Peyton Manning's a good-looking guy. He was just a long time ago. He's young. So she wants to interview him. So she does, and she goes, what do you think about your first All-Star experience? And Peyton goes, well, I'm not really an All-Star. I'm just here because I know somebody on the field. So she goes, oh, seriously, what do you think of your first All-Star experience? He goes, I'm not an All-Star. I'm just here BSing with my buddy.
Guy, as it pertains to baseball, I'm just thinking, speaking of that, can you name the team that the only team that drafted two Hall of Fame quarterbacks in the same draft?
Well, it certainly wasn't John Hewitt, so it wasn't Namath and Hewitt. Boy, you know, that's a good one, Kevin.
It is a good one. Mike, you want to take a crack at it?
They must have traded one of them right away.
I have no idea, Kevin. Maybe it had something to do with Ryan Leaf. Who knows?
No, it was the Kansas City Royals. They drafted Dan Marino in the fourth round, and they drafted John Elway in the 18th round. I forget it was like 1979 or something. And they didn't sign either one of them.
Well, he had already been playing pro ball, Elway, right?
Elway did play some. He might have actually been on the Yankees for a hot minute. But, yeah, that was part of his negotiating ploy to not have to play, I think, in Indianapolis.
I didn't realize that Marino was that good.
Yeah, I didn't know that either, but I saw that question earlier this week. I thought it's a pretty cool question.
Well, I know Kenny Hubbs, the long-departed star rookie of the year Cub second baseman that died in a plane crash after 2 years, he was super hotly recruited as a quarterback to Notre Dame.
Yeah, so was Jamie Quirk.
Really?
A longtime catcher for the Royals. Was recruited by Dan Devine. Ryne Sandberg was widely recruited as a quarterback, but I don't know if any association with Notre Dame, but Ryne Sandberg was a really hot stuff quarterback in his day in high school. Yeah, there's a lot of these guys, and you know more guys specialize early now. But you still see multi-sport athletes. You still see the guys that can play basketball and football or whatever sport. So it's not surprising. These guys, you know, you get a lot of great athletes at the high school level.
Some of this stuff is so. Did you happen to listen to Lou last week when he was talking about him getting interviewed when his kid was playing volleyball? You hear that story?
I was listening and I don't remember what he said.
Well, evidently his kid, went to a regular school and has kind of whatever being a regular job is someplace. But evidently, when he was in high school, he was quite the volleyball player. So after one of the games, and this is a while ago, Lou says he sees these two guys in suits, you know, talking to his kid after the game. So he figures, okay, I better get my butt over there. And they're giving him this huge quiz about. And they go to Lou, well, who are you? Well, I'm his dad. Oh, okay. So Lou's a pretty big guy. So they're pretty happy with that. They immediately say, oh, what are you, like 6'4"? Yeah, they write that down. Then they go, how tall is your dad? They start going back, is there anybody in the family that's like 6'7" or something? And Lou goes, well, I don't know. I suppose it was some uncle that was that tall that I never met. Oh, they're giving him the full like genetic makeup of the kid, thinking if the kid's going to keep growing or something. I mean, how bizarre is that? And last night, I was fortunately had my buddy Bill is feeling a little better, so I managed to get him down to the bar, which he wanted to go, and he had a stroke, so he's kind of wobbling a little bit. And he was telling me he picks up his phone out of the top 50 or 60 lady lacrosse recruits for college is his granddaughter, and she's a freshman at Loyola, and she's already listed as one of the top recruits. Kevin, how crazy is this getting, or Mike?
Well, it's from U Sports, Tom. Just, you know, Dave Murphy alludes to it all the time with his nephews, so it's kind of the same thing.
I mean, how do you...
Our grandchildren.
I remember, you can back up the train a lot of years. I remember Skylar Diggins being hotly recruited as a freshman here in, because she played here in South Bend, so I just happen to remember her being on the news. But, you know, it's not new.
But, Kevin, who's the personnel... I mean, there's massive effort to do that. I mean, who are the people that do it? How do they get paid? I mean, who pays them? I mean, the whole Why am I always into how it all works? Because you got to do something to somebody somewhere along the line, don't you? I mean, I know one of my good friends from Pullman, Bob Paschek, used to be one of you'll remember this, Mike, maybe from Chicago. The Sun-Times used to be they were the place for prep ball, be it basketball or whatever. And what's the guy's name? Taylor or something. Tyler, whatever he was.
Taylor. Oh shit! What was his last name?
We'll think of it. One of us. He had a gazillion stringers. So whatever game Bob loved high school basketball. So whatever game he was going to on Friday and then maybe on Saturday, Taylor Bell.
Yeah, Taylor Bell. And I do. I remember him being in our locker room with that. For football after games at times.
But he had guys. Now, Bob, he would go grab a phone. It was like an 800 number. You'd give the score. You'd give anybody who had high points, anybody who stood out, and it was like a four-line thing. So they had things back then. I'm sure that if Bob said, God, this Mike Murphy kid's like really good, then the next guy who covered the game, this Mike Murphy kid had 15 points. I mean, there was kind of a jumble of information then that people probably kept track of. Plus,
well,
coaches
nowadays they have these newfangled database things.
Yeah, well, that's what I'm saying. I mean, but who? Somebody there, still has to input.
All of it is totally available. There's video. Heck, my nephew when he was playing at St. Viator had, or maybe no, he might have played at public school. Anyway, my sister-in-law used to send out the highlight film, his highlight clips every week.
Well, now does the school do that, Kevin, or other people?
Yeah, the school does it. School, students do it. Students love doing stuff.
All right, so that all the databases inputted by them. In the old days, it kind of wasn't. You had actually people there to watch, right?
Yeah, and take it up to the college level. I just was in a meeting with some people who are interested in hiring some of our students as interns from Notre Dame Studios. Notre Dame Studios does anything from live streaming mass from the Basilica to doing classroom videotaping to all of the stuff that Notre Dame does with the ACC network and the stuff in the stadium and so on. And they have their own, they hire their own students, but they actually sort of felt that Ivy Tech might give them a more reliable workforce because the students at Notre Dame tend to look at the job as an extracurricular activity rather than a real internship. So,
sort of like football, extracurricular activity.
Yeah, it is an extracurricular activity. So,
Mike, is the on the soccer edge, is having the World Cup here, does this put a real goose into U.S. soccer, you think, especially in colleges or high school level or anything?
Well, I think it puts somewhat of a goose in it, Tom, but, we've obviously done this before, and you get the temporary spike, and then it kind of goes back to. Although FIFA,
baseball.
it goes back to baseball, football, or basketball, whatever.
Well, I will say as a neophyte on this, and it's why I listen to every word you say. I tried to watch some of this just so I wasn't so totally ignorant when you talked. The difference between the first games. And the last games is almost like the difference between a NBA game in October and a playoff game. I mean, the first games, I'm like, God, it's like watching paint dry. One team was obviously better. They hacked around for a while, then they put one in, and it was over. But these last games, man, they're pretty exciting. I mean, even for me. And in NBA, you can watch a season game, and you go, "What's this? What's the fun about?" Yeah, you watch a playoff game, and you go, "This is pretty good stuff." I mean, I'm a little concerned if they went to 64 teams, you just end up with more of those games, but they're not going to concern themselves.
Well, I don't think they'll. Well, who knows? I mean, what you've talked about with our pro sports, we're hurting our pro sports by going to all these different networks and all the streaming services. But I guess that's the way of the future, and I guess FIFA sees it also. I mean, and FIFA has a monopoly on football. On European football, so I mean they're working it pretty well too. But they're using, I'd say they're using the NFL model to a degree. Although the good thing is Fox Sports just I mean, Fox just covered it in its entirety. It was either Fox or, well, for me, it was either on Fox or it was on Fox Sport 1, and they covered all the games that way.
Yeah, I think Fox did a pretty nice job, or it has done a pretty nice job with it, too, this year.
I would have to agree. I mean, I don't know how it could be better or worse. It looks to me like it was pretty damn good.
Guys, I have to jump off. I may jump back on in the car few minutes.
Mike, what was the final tally on the ball that hit the wire?
The ball that hit the wire?
In one of the games, the ball hit one of the camera that runs around on the field.
Oh, Tom, I don't know. Because I haven't been able to watch every game either. I've taped them, but I don't know which. Was it in the Dallas Stadium, maybe?
It might have been, but it didn't hit the... I think it might have been, but it was it somehow affected the play. I don't know if it was on a goal or whatever, but I don't know the for those that haven't been to a.
Oh, I think what happened is the ref ended up dropping the ball. It probably didn't work out the way that it should have, because you know it's such a it's hard when it gets up into the rafters to see where it's going to end up going. In Dallas, for instance, sometimes the punters hit that scoreboard too. So,
well, for those who don't know what the hell we're talking about, if you've gone to a live, I guess I haven't been to a Bear game in so long, but if you go to like a live Notre Dame game or on, you see these pictures over the field. They actually string cables. What's it like in a? God, you know more about this than me, Mike. There's like three different lines where the thing. The camera runs around, but it can go east and west, and it can go north and south.
Yes, but for instance, in some of the indoor stadiums, the cables probably are not high enough, and I know the scoreboard isn't high enough in Dallas because I've seen it happen. So they just have to figure out a better way. It's, you know, baseball actually does it too if it hits something. Oh, in one of the dome stadiums,
the one in Tampa Bay,
right? It used to, and the Astrodome too when they played there. It had some difficulties.
So. But this thing you definitely could. I'm not so sure in the outdoor stadiums they're that much higher, Mike. The one in Notre Dame you could hit. Last time I was there.
Yeah, oh yeah, because of the one that they run the camera on.
Yeah,
you know, on the.
But it's kind of weird. They can cover the whole field with really only two cables because they move both of the cables. They can run the thing around. It's not that fast, but they can get it around.
Yeah.
I think the first time somebody hit the scoreboard at Dallas, as a guy who actually took a tour there, Mike, you know, the only way you can get into the scoreboard is by this little pod.
That goes up there, huh?
I mean, I guess you could if you, since it's suspended from the ceiling, you could come down from the top if you had to, if you were like a monkey. But
right.
By and large, a thing comes down and you get on it almost like you're in the Enterprise in the transporter, and the thing hauls you up by cable.
Yeah.
So all the guys...
They've got to do maintenance somehow, so...
Well, no, that's how the guys get up there to man it during the game.
Right, right.
But that thing was down, and that's the first punter hit that. He didn't hit the scoreboard.
Oh, okay.
But I think, like you say, somebody might have hit the thing. You remember it was after we graduated. Who was Ray Guy is still considered, you know, the premier punter ever, but there was a guy from Florida State, left-handed punter. I don't think he's in the Pro Football Hall of Fame, but he came to the pros, and he was like the best punter in the league for 15 years. But somehow he's not in the Hall of Fame, I don't think. Was it Strikes or something? I went down to Notre Dame and before they put the addition on the place, but if you sat in the top row, which I always tried to do, or at least stand up there, and the guy, you know, kicked the punt was always, you know, like kind of below you, right? Starks was the guy's name. And all of a sudden, this guy from Florida State punts the ball, and I'm going, wait a minute, that's way over my head. I've never seen that before. Who's this guy? That was him.
Well, and that's where he got the hang time that they probably wanted.
So well, Mike, can you imagine being in the 60th row and having to go over your head?
Yeah, it'd be pretty tough, right?
Oh, but really something. All right, so
that'd be a heck of a punter.
So right. What if they're going to do a... See, I'm always, you know, barking on kind of the marketing on this stuff, Mike, because I've had a firm forever and you got to figure out what's worth it to you. And I did that for the SIBO for 3 years as chairman of the marketing committee. But I always wonder when... When baseball does something like this, they have to, meaning the Home Run Derby on Netflix, it has to have, there's no way as many people watched it as if it was on regular Channel 7 or something, or even ESPN
right.
or something.
Yep.
I'm always curious as to how they calculate, first in terms of money. Now, if Netflix pays for it, they must be doing it to sell subscriptions, which, by and large, you know, I don't know, is that it? They're doing it to essentially one-up you. It's called you know, stringing things together, which really is against the Clayton Act, I think. But I'd have trouble with that argument in front of the Supreme Court, especially this one. But by and large, you're doing this to sell something else. Now, you're paying Major League Baseball some dough, but the commercials themselves can't be near as much as they are on a regular channel because there's not near as many people watching. Plus, half the commercials are probably for Netflix.
Yeah, so, who knows?
Netflix,
I mean,
Netflix doesn't usually do commercials on their programming. They did on the Home Run Derby. But, you know, the other thing is, I think Home Run Derby had become a fairly unpopular event in terms of TV. So they probably didn't lose as much audience as you think, because it really became something that only the real hardcore people would watch, and because it got so silly. Now maybe it would have been better with the rules change. You know, maybe there would have been things that would have improved it had they left it on network TV or on ESPN, but. I just think one of their issues and one of the reasons that they had to change the rules was because nobody was watching.
Well, I mean, we'll go back to the baseball 2 weeks ago when everything's on Peacock. I mean, I first am kind of aggravated because I pay for Marquee, which essentially advertises all the Cub games except for the ones on national TV, meaning Fox or ESPN, which I get because they're the first level of the cable. And I also know people that have the Major League MLB package, which allegedly is supposed to get you every game, too. So I got that, and I got Marquee, and guess what? I'm bleep out of luck. I mean, how many times can they sell the same game? I mean, you start...
Yeah, you know, Peacock was a stunt, and I can't imagine that that went over very well.
Well, a couple of the games were actually on Channel 5. NBC. So they actually had, there were a couple of games you could watch a game, but I mean there was like two or three on, you know, afternoon, late afternoon, and evening, and the rest of them you had to go to the Peacock Plus or whatever the thing is. But I mean, I just, for me, baseball didn't exist for the day. Now, I guess I'm dumb enough to watch them again on Monday, but I mean, I don't know how long you can do that. I mean, I know bars that said, I'm not doing that. The Vito Knicks, they got the Northeast package, they got the Major League Baseball package, they got Marquee, you name it. And all of a sudden, something comes up like this, and they're going, screw it. And I'm not doing Apple for the night.
Yeah, I personally think the whole thing is short-sighted. MLB may pick up a lot of revenue now. And MLB has they have the most sophisticated streaming setup as it is, but I think they're diluting their own product, and it just doesn't make sense to me as a marketer. Maybe they have marketing people and research data that says to the contrary, but I don't think. I don't think you want to alienate your fans. You don't want to piss off your fans, and you don't want to make it difficult for young fans to find you. Because if you want to keep growing the game, you can't lose a generation, and they already have to worry about, you know, how much they've lost a generation to other options.
Well, you often want. I mean, I just it's such an unnatural curiosity that become natural to me is if your commercials are 40% less. Because if you do run commercials, then okay, how is that money made up? Because somebody obviously is paying for it, and they're paying for it, and they're not idiots, Kevin. You're right. They must think that they're getting something else for that money. Now, are they getting that many people to subscribe? And I know you couldn't you couldn't buy out Mike Murphy's oranges and only have them at one store and say in order for you to buy the oranges, you got to buy something else. I mean, that's, well, back when people used to care about antitrust, it's sort of illegal. I mean, I'm just curious how they think they're making it up. I mean, do you think they're going to get that many subscriptions if the commercials, instead of 50 grand or 10 grand? I mean, I don't know. That's why I'd love to see the numbers. Just saying, we don't know what they are.
I tell you what, they'd have to do something big, something that says people are willing to pay for this for a month to be able to watch this one event. So they're willing to take out 1 month of subscription, and then they just hope to God that people forget to cancel.
So, question: how is it that White Sox have three guys on the All-Star team, and none of the three guys are their best player?
Well, it's the way the voting goes, isn't it?
I guess, yeah. Well, no, then
who's the best player that's not on it?
The shortstop.
Montgomery?
Yeah.
I think, you know, other than the fact that he spent a long time on the injured list, I thought Murakami was their best player. And Tristan Peters is probably by far their highest batting average. And Miguel Vargas is arguably as good as any third baseman in the American League. So,
well, I'm not denigrating any of those people. I'm just saying the dude has got, since he's been in the league, which has been, what, a whole year now, he's got more home runs than anybody, right? I mean, he's
got a lot. He's in the 40s for his first 162 games. Yeah.
I mean, that's a... And he plays.
He's also, you know, he's also in the 220s for his batting average. And, you know, he's the typical guy for today, where he hits a lot of long ball, and his on base percentage isn't bad, but his batting average isn't great.
So they
I think you could make a comparable argument for Vargas or a lot of other people on the White Sox, and they're not going to take them all.
No. Although, as you recall, not mentioning your age. In 1969, the entire All-Star infield at one point was Cubs.
Yeah, I get it.
So
there were times when the Reds rather heavily populated too. The God, yeah. Machine have populated the starting lineups.
Well, the Dodgers had a bunch of guys last night, didn't they?
Yeah.
And then what's his name? Ohtani didn't even play. I'm sure he would have been the DH. How could he not have been? But the Sox have a great problem they have, and I know you're absolutely correct when you say you don't have to worry shortstops can play anything, but I didn't realize how good this Vargas guy was, so I just assumed, okay, they're going to draft his number one pick as the shortstop, and a year from now they're going to move Montgomery over to third, and everybody's going to be happy. Well, that Vargas isn't going anywhere. Nobody's moving him. Going to look like.
Now, although he's played a fair amount of first base for him, too, so if Murakami's going to or a DH, they could do it that way. A nice problem to have.
Yeah, well, Murakami's pretty good in the field. Murakami's pretty good in the field, though, isn't he?
Yeah, not bad. And not everybody can DH too. I mean, it's, you know, if you're a great hit, everybody thinks if you're a great hitter, you can do it. But you know, it does take you out of the game. I Seiya Suzuki had that issue last year. His split. From when he was a DH versus when he was a right fielder, he's an okay right fielder. He's decent, but he's not a great right fielder. But he hits so much better when he's playing the field.
Yeah. Hey, one quick question on other stuff before we get Russell and hopefully Larissa. What do you guys think of those CPI numbers?
Russell's in. By the way, I looked to see if Larissa's in.
But what did you think of those CPI numbers yesterday? It's just every time I see these numbers, I kind of shudder, but. Only because I have to listen to this stuff all day, guys, and it's stunning to me. And I listen to the new Fed chairman, sort of like the old Fed chairman. Doesn't it piss you off being, because we're three old grumpy guys, right? Doesn't it piss you off when other people tell you all day how well you're doing, when maybe you don't think you are? If enough people tell you
I'm
that,
I'm doing great. You can tell me I'm doing well all you want.
Okay.
I'm tongue in cheek on that.
I know. I wonder when we've become, and I'm sure as hell not going to blame it on current people because it's been going on for a long time. When did it become okay to just lie to people every month on CPI numbers and other stuff? I mean, it's been going on for a long, long time. But God, when I was doing this, when I was, you know, fresh out of school at Pullman, everybody believed the CPI. But now you can't even. Just I'll give you one quick example because I don't want to go into it. Because if Russell's on, he'll hear it too, and we'll talk about it. If you look at the line that has medical services, right? They've got it at they're up to 6.8% of your basket, all right? And now you look at energy, and the reason why the number was down is they had energy down 10%, which it probably was 3 weeks ago when they did it, but now it's right back up, so you got to be careful with these numbers. And hopefully not going higher.
Although it's a little weird because the prices here have fallen a couple of cents this week, which I would not have expected.
Yeah, that's kind of, well, they jumped up like 80 cents 2 weeks ago here, and then they went down, and they're kind of creeping back up. So, yeah, it's pretty volatile. But
I know you had cited that before. I had never saw that big jump up.
Well, I don't know why it went down so much. But, I mean, it went down to 339, and the next week it was like 410. I have no idea why it went down to 339. Why, you know, but. So I'm clueless both ways, so it's not like I'm just picking on the one. But the thing, now they've got your medical expenses at 6.8% of your basket. You know, and I could spend an hour talking about various income strata and what percentage it is of your basket, but I'm not going to go there. They have gasoline, I got it up here somewhere, but it's like 4.6% of your basket. All right, which, now wait a minute. Gasoline, if you do the math, if you drive 15,000 miles a year and you get a car that's, 20 miles to the gallon, we're talking 750 gallons times 4 is roughly $3,000, all right? For a firm like PTI to get a insurance policy for an employee, our contribution plus now we as employees making a contribution is pushing $25,000 a year, which doesn't even take any out-of-pocket if you actually have to do something or any prescription you might have to actually buy. So these idiots, over a long period of time, are telling you that $3,000 a year, now, if you have a family, you might have two cars, so I'm being a little cheaty here, but by and large, they're saying $3,000 or $4,000 a year is 4.5% of your basket, where 25 plus is 6.5%. Now, I'm going to say that we've been out of school a while, guys, but that math doesn't hunt. I mean, I don't know. One of the ways they through three or four administrations have lied on this, certainly since Obamacare came out, is, does anybody really think, especially if you're older, that medical care for you is 6.5% of your basket? And yet it's been that way since 2000. Now that's kind of a long time to lie, isn't it?
Yeah, are they measuring care, or are they measuring, and they're two different, and medical care itself is, it would be sky high, and I know because I've been seeing the bills last year, but are they measuring insurance separate from
No, they don't measure it at all.
Medical care itself.
They do measure the insurance somewhat separately, and they actually had it going down, but I'm saying the cost of a person, I mean, what does it actually cost somebody to do that? And I went back to 2000 and until now, and it's up like, it's almost three times what it was back in 2000. Like, if the only way I know how to do it, Kevin, really, since I don't hang around emergency rooms and operating rooms, the only way I know how to do it is to trace the insurance. I know it's a tad sloppy, but it's, how else am I going to do it? But I'm saying, but that's really your cost. According to AI, They claim that the most companies now are paying like $17,000 for a family, but the contributions of the person is up to the point where the total bill is like $23,000 to $25,000, and still there's probably a deductible someplace. So I mean, it really ought to be, you know, well, just put it this way: it's 20% of the economy. How can it be 66% of everybody's basket? I mean, duh. But if you go back and you look at even just that one item, and I could take apart, I won't because we got Russell waiting, you also could take apart the owner's equivalent rent. If you just take those two, but stick on the medical stuff, you could probably, if you did it right and said, okay, that's 20% of the basket for the last 25 years, you could really make the case that a huge chunk of the society, maybe the entire number, we've been in a recession for 25 years. If you add essentially 1% to the CPI going back 25 years. Well, hell, that's a lot different than 15 people in a row telling you how good you're doing, right? I mean, we're not even close. And again, it's not... Every administration seems to see what the guys before them did it and go, wow, we'll keep doing that. I mean, and maybe it inflames me a little bit because the Fed chair, the new Fed chair, and I got nothing against the guy. He seems like he's pretty conservative, actually. Well, should be right up my alley. All he did was talk about how he's going to fight inflation. Kevin, we all know what he's got to do to fight inflation. He hasn't even hinted at doing any of those things. What's he planning on doing? Just talking about it more or what? I mean, anyway, it's probably more of a Russell question, but I get the feeling that somewhere along the line here, we're going to have to actually make some changes. And I don't really care who's in office to do it. And I'm wondering if this IBM episode yesterday, the 20% drop, you know, Carl's talking about that's, you know, maybe the canary in the coal mine. I don't know that. You know more than me. What do you think? I'll ask you because you're an IT guy, really. What in IBM's lineup makes them uniquely vulnerable to that kind of a move? I mean, where are they in this buyer versus seller? Micron up one day and Microsoft down, and then the other way it's the other way. Where does IBM fit? Do you know where in all your stuff? Does your school buy stuff from those guys still, or what?
Well, no, IBM. You know, obviously they still have the mainframe computer business, which is, you know, its own weird animal. But computing power, obviously, you know. So when we talk about AI, as far as I'm concerned, we're just talking about computing power.
Okay.
At this point. Okay, and just think of it like that. That, you know, big application. Oh,
you're never going on national TV because you got to be well, revered.
That's fine. And yeah. There is, you know, there is a certain amount of machine learning and all that kind of stuff that go, you know, that is happening. But it is really about, you know, just gobs and gobs of computing power. And computing power has emerged and become a lot cheaper than it used to be and a lot more available. And there's a lot more bandwidth for getting data from here to there. And there's all kinds of database technology for storing things. So there's a whole lot of things that have converged and have us to this point. IBM runs a lot of platforms. One of their really well-known ones is their blockchain platform, and that's and it's not blockchain for the purposes of you know, cryptocurrencies. It's blockchain for, you know, supply chain types of applications. And it's a growing business, but it's not the same booming type of business that you're seeing with a lot of the data center business, the Amazon Web Services, you know, Metas and those kinds of things. And I'm not sure where those are going to go either. You know, if you talk to Carl, they're going to that's all going to crash and burn at some point, and it very well may. But the you know, IBM is it's still a business services organization. It's still going to ride the ups and downs of the market, of the costs of technology, of the availability of technology. And you know, like everything else, I keep talking about, you know, demand amplification. Every time something changes, the swings are not proportional to the change. The swings are always greater than the change, and they have to find their way back to an equilibrium. So if you look at, for instance, the impact of the Middle East war, which I heard called yesterday the first AI war, and it was kind of an interesting perspective because all of this precision stuff that's being done is all, you know, part of that AI compute power model. But that's a huge disruption to markets of various kinds, including the markets for technology, because so much of it's getting directed to the defense industry, and it's going to swing wildly in one direction, and then it's going to snap its way back too far in the other direction until it seeks some kind of equilibrium, except that we keep getting these jolts in short intervals, so it never has a chance to get back to a market equilibrium.
Well, that makes sense. Russell, pile in, bud.
The situation with IBM, and I haven't been able to dig as much as I'd like to, but I'm fixated on, you know, the AI spend and how all the companies that are doing big AI spend are running out of cash. And I really feel like the big canary in the coal mine is going to be when Microsoft reports in a couple of weeks, because they're 22% of NVIDIA's revenues. So, and they're on an unsustainable path as far as spend goes. Could people be cutting from other areas, and that's where IBM is getting hurt? Like, you're trying to cutting some non-essential things that you're doing through IBM because you got to find the money to, you know, finish your AI build out or continue to invest in that area. So just because they don't really have the presence that a lot of other firms do, I feel like maybe that's what's going on with them.
Well, Russell, if you listen to
them referred to as an AI company before.
Yeah, it's a good question because, ownership of the data is a big deal, and I'm not talking about protections of ownership. I'm talking about there are a lot of companies that are moving away from that, you know, the whole idea of AI exploring the world and bringing them back all the answers, and are really saying my applications for AI are with my own data. Mm-hmm. So I think there is a scaling back of demand for AI services, for data services, for platforms, and all of those kinds of things, specifically. And you're and I've been saying this for a while, that the money right now, I think, is in the use cases. That you're looking at companies like SAP to an extent. You're looking at companies like Microsoft that offer business applications and the Dynamics suite of stuff that Microsoft has. I think those are the places where people are starting to use it. And I don't think Microsoft is as far out in front as a company like SAP is.
Oh, gosh, no.
Well, at the risk of agreeing with Kevin, I have some clients that are involved in some really big corporations. And Kevin, I think you're spot on. I mean, I know I've heard tell that McDonald's uses it a lot, and I think that they use it internally for, you know, marketing decisions and sorting out, I mean, how many gazillion stores do they have and stuff. I think they're using it internally, like you're saying. I don't know if they're necessarily, I don't know who they buy it from or who they get it from. That's more of a Carl question, I guess. But I think they're finding it very helpful, and maybe in ways that they don't talk about on TV, sort of like what you're talking
McDonald's,
about.
McDonald's has always been really good at predictive analytics, and the extra computing power is just making them better at it. Right. You know, they don't throw away a lot of stuff because they know exactly what they're going to sell this afternoon between 12:15 and 12:30, and what they're going to sell between 4 and 4:10. You know, I mean, they know, and it doesn't deviate unless a busload of people shows up at an inopportune time. They know, you know, their management of by using predictive analytics in their stores for day-to-day operations is incredible. And you're seeing a lot of companies that are thinking that way, that's the process that they're using to and how they're starting to use AI or large computing power, and like I said, predictive analytics. People would call that a form of AI, but I, as far as I'm concerned, data analytics and big data analytics have been around for a long time. I need to sign off.
All right,
so,
bud. Take care.
I will turn it over to Russell to finish all thoughts.
Talk at you Friday. Russell, how are you? Where's our friend?
I think our friend is going to be pretty choppy in her appearances. Her mom duties are starting to interfere with the mornings. So
I have to keep quoting
her. Me.
I have to keep quoting her from 3 weeks ago.
No, you may be quoting her from years ago.
Oh, really? Well, I hope she's not going forever. But
she's got a 5-year-old and a 10-year-old that require morning attention that she can't give when she's on with us.
Oh, that's true. Well,
yeah,
I might have to send her an email and say.
Speaking of children,
yeah.
Yeah, my beagle just, I guess she knew that I was just starting to talk because she never opens the door, and she just opened the door.
Well, there you go.
Hey, Daisy. Well, yeah, Daisy has opinions. By the way, Daisy wanted to share with you that I know exactly why all the major, why all the sports entities, can't even say the professional sports, all the sports entities are so jacked about streaming, and streaming so jacked about the sports. Do you know the number one day of new subscriptions for Amazon? It's when the first day that they offered NFL games.
Really?
Yep. And I think they continue to at Kelly, we have a program where there are, if you get a full pension from the NFL, you can get a Kelly MBA degree for free.
the Players Association pays for it. It's part of, you know, it's just part of the union deal. In fact, we've got it with, gosh, I think four leagues now.
What if the guy never graduated college?
Do what? Well, then he can't come to Kelly.
Okay.
Yeah. But I had one guy who's in the front office. Now, played with some pretty high-end people. Actually, I think he overlapped with Pete. And he got his MBA from us. He's in the front office with a team. He also does some work for the league. So, you know, when streaming was starting to take over, we would talk about it an awful lot in class, and he would cite that number over and over again. I feel like that the leagues are probably very hung up. You know, they're very hung up, or the streaming services are very hung up on that. Oh gosh, we got to have some sort of live sports because, you know, and it's probably a loss leader for other stuff. Well, I can't imagine they're making money. My impression of sports on TV is it's always been something that you're trying to get people to stick around and watch 60 minutes.
Yeah, well,
you know, that it's almost like a lead in to your other programming.
Well, what I you know, I hate to help to be an armchair attorney, but I'm going to be. For some reason, in undergrad, Russell, I had a couple guys that all he did was talk about antitrust and monopolies and patents and those kinds of things. I don't know why I took those courses, but the guys were really good. Southside vernacular. There is a pizza joint on 95th Street.
No, I know. Yeah.
That offered, if you bought a pizza, they sold you a bottle of pretty decent wine for $5. Now, their cost, if they went down and bought the wine, although I'm sure they got it from a distributor, their cost was $8. So there was two or three, were two or three places that are independent liquor stores, and, you know, there's a Jewel there and so forth that sell booze. They were outraged and immediately filed, I don't know about suit or just made a complaint to the Better Business Bureau saying, you can't do that. You can't sell something else at less than your cost to get people to buy something else. And I think that whoever was in charge, whether it was the county or the state, walked in and said, hey, you guys can't do that. You gotta at least charge the $8 that you're paying for. I mean, there's a name for that in the Clayton Act somewhere or in the Robinson-Patman Act. How does these other guys get away with it?
Well, first of all, was that Palermo's?
Yeah. Yeah.
How about that?
Yeah, pretty good.
Yeah, so if anybody ever says, just because I didn't grow up here, I'm not a Chicagoan,
yeah.
I know things. So, yeah, I've forgotten what that, you know, there were other instances of that back, and it wasn't necessarily the, you know, the liquor thing or anything else, but just, you know, where people would basically give away things, with, you know, and you know, we're circumventing competitors, etc. It's an anti-competitive type thing, and I feel like it's got shut down like in the 70s or 80s. I forgot where I was, what I was specifically going with that one.
Well, when you see right now, I do, you know, I mainly because of the COVID. A lot of times after the show, I relax by cooking breakfast for the PTI people, or the owner cooking breakfast, right? So I do some shopping. Plus, I do it. It also helps me out in talking about the show. And that's why that's why Larissa's so important, because she's kind of on the same page as me in terms of how it affects regular people. But you notice that you'll see now, Russell, like say, just pick one. Hellman's mayonnaise is normally $6, right? Or whatever the hell it is, $5.75. Then you walk in and it's $4, and you go, no, wait a minute. I don't think Myers is going to sell it for less than they're paying for it. If you happen to go to Jewel on the same morning, you're probably going to see Hellman's mayonnaise on sale at Jewel as well, which means whoever the hell owns Hellman's must be eating part of the sale, because they must be going to all the stores and saying, if you want to have a sale on mayonnaise this week, we'll cut you guys back you know, 50, 75, or a buck on what you pay us, you know, the rest is up to you.
Mm-hmm.
And it must be, you know, I don't know if it's, you know, maybe it's every 3 months that the stuff will go on sale or whatever, or two for the price, whatever they do. But you get the feeling that one store doesn't just have a loss leader to that extent. It's somehow or another, it's that the company is offering this benefit to everybody, and they're free to pick up on it if they want. And then they all sort of do. I mean, if you look at, in Audrey in New Orleans, they still send you all the coupon things. In Chicago, yeah. you never get them, but she gets them in New Orleans. And you go through like three or four food stores in the area, you'll find the same brand on sale at every one of the stores. So clearly some of that must be coming from the manufacturer or the distributor. It's not It's not one person saying, you know, I'll give you some Hellmann's mayonnaise for free, even though I'm paying $5 for it. So come on in, and by the way, when you're here, you're sure to buy something else. I think that's actually illegal to do that. And I'm wondering if what these guys are doing, the only way you can watch this football game is to buy a Peacock subscription. Well,
oh, hadn't thought of it that way.
Yeah, I mean, it's an interesting one. And, you know, and if they're taking a big loss on what they're paying the NFL to do that, I don't know. I mean, who's going to go after somebody big, really, in any administration of the last four or five? Because they seem to think antitrust is just for guys like you and me, right? But nobody's going to go after. But I wonder, technically, if that's legal. I think it isn't.
I almost feel like just about anything you do in business, if the government wants to come after you, they probably can find a reason to come after you.
Or not.
And you could use the application of what you're talking about, you know, to maybe go after streamers, et cetera. I'm just trying to think of if they were to go after, they being the federal government, you know, what would be the catalyst behind them going after, you know, the streaming services, the media companies, and you know, professional sports? I guess it would just take a ton of complaining about it.
Well, I wonder, even with the simple baseball thing or the soccer thing, it's the same sort of deal. If the esteemed firm of Russell and Chief paid $40 million to put our name up on Dallas Stadium, which AT&T did, and it was $40 million, how does FIFA come in and say, oh, no, it's for us, it's Dallas Stadium? I mean, is there...
That's something they work at. The Olympics do the exact same thing. When I was... It's funny, because I lived in Atlanta through the Olympics, and, you know, it's part of the bidding process where you give up all the naming rights to the stadiums,
but I
for that one event.
Well, if it's in the contract, I have no problem. But what if it isn't?
Yeah, it's a contractual thing. I mean, you would walk around the Olympic Stadium, and you would walk around the Olympic, which turned into the baseball stadium for a while in Atlanta, and then they moved to the suburbs. But you would walk around the different venues during the Olympics. And the ATMs would be shut off if they weren't a sponsor ATM. I mean, it was they were pretty hardcore on that.
But I know they are. I'm just wondering, is that in every contract? And, for instance, when they had the NFL draft.
Because I dug into it after, you know. I went to some Olympic baseball games because I know people gave you tickets to the Olympic baseball games because nobody cared. But yeah, you would go to everything that you could possibly go to because it was, you know, such a unique event. And, you know, they would have tarps on top of different billboards, et cetera. Because if you didn't pay, you know, if you didn't pay specifically for the Olympics. And that, the other thing is, I think, you know, with respect to the Olympics, and God that knows this ain't true with FIFA, but with the Olympics, they try to keep the amount of advertising that's showing up in the background to a minimum.
Okay, but I'm with you.
Because they're all pure amateur athletes.
Yeah, well, I honestly have no issue with if when AT&T signs a contract, they say, oh, by the way, if FIFA or the Olympics ever get here, you're bleep out of luck. I don't have any problem with that.
No, that's for you know, those two or three very unique events.
In fact, I think they, every time we've had an Olympics, they refer to, you know, again, the stadium in Atlanta was referred to as the Olympic Stadium, and then they retrofit it for baseball.
Well, I mean,
but during the time that it was being used, and you know, Montreal, they played baseball in that stadium, and they also, I think, they always called it the Olympic Stadium. Well, you know, that maybe that was so long ago.
No, so long ago that, but I mean,
it was pre-sponsor.
I'm sort of curious that if you and I had a billboard for the Rhodes and Howe law firm, can you imagine that, on the side of a building coming into the city, and all of a sudden the NFL decides to have the draft here, which they did. They say, "Oh no, we're not going to have that." How do they not give us some money for covering the damn thing up? I mean, because we paid.
I would assume that because this is very standard for just two or three major international events, that there's, you know, when, you know, Guaranteed Rate stepped up and said, you know, that they're going to sponsor the White Sox Stadium, that there's a certain class of events that fall outside of that, and there's an awareness of that.
Okay, now how does it get down to schmoes like you and me?
Where if we had to see, like, one of the big controversies when I lived in Atlanta back in the 90s was the giant Hooters billboard in right field. They covered that thing up for the Olympics, and I'm sure Hooters was not particularly happy about that.
Okay, but I guess now how does it get down to the little schmoes, meaning us? I pay for my cable bill, probably includes $5 or $10 for a marquee, and that's essentially for all the Cub games except for the ones on Fox or ESPN, which I get as well. All of a sudden now I'm short 10 games. Now, am I going to get
$3? Your Cubs, and your Cubs love you so much, you should give them more money.
Okay, but I'm saying it's clearly not in that contract.
See, I think professional sports is an abusive marriage.
Yeah, well, yeah.
It is. I didn't even realize the All-Star game was last night. Was it last night?
Yeah, when I couldn't watch the Home Run Derby, I didn't watch it last night.
Well, see, that's the thing is, you know, the All-Star weekend, you know, it used to dominate one network, and they would, you know, do nothing but talk about it leading up to it, and as personally goes, my family vacation every year was the week after the 4th of July growing up, and we always watched the All-Star game together. I mean, it was just like a big, you know, in Little League in Memphis actually started on the 4th of July. So this was all, it all kind of came together.
Really?
This time of year. Yeah, you don't see teams from Tennessee in the Little League World Series, and that's because they operate, they have a different type of operation there.
Well, that's interesting. You wonder, they say, we should probably go to break and we come back. Let's not so much talk about the IBM thing, because it'll play itself out. But the media, if you're just a regular investor, and I know a couple people, by the way, same people you know, that I think, other than maybe some CBOE stock, IBM's been their biggest holding for... But it's stunning to me how yesterday the thing's down 20... It's the biggest move ever in IBM stock, and IBM has been around, like, for a really long time. And all of a sudden, this morning, guys are going, I probably wouldn't touch that stock. But I really, and one part of me says, that's why I'm asking Kevin, and I'll ask certainly Carl on Friday, is IBM absolutely unique, and yet they were 20% over, 21% overvalued, to where in one day you got it basically stung where the sun don't shine? Or are they the first one of many? That would be the question. But let's gnaw on that over break. SP Futures up 11, NASDAQ Futures up 142. Be right back. Stacks and Jacks.
What are you going to do with your old car? You can try selling it, you could junk it, or you can donate it to Heritage for the Blind. Your car will be towed away for free, and your donation is tax deductible. Just call 1-800-639-8620. Heritage for the Blind accepts cars, vans, trucks, and boats. It doesn't matter if your vehicle runs or not. It'll be towed away for free. and you'll be supporting those that need help. Heritage for the Blind is a nonprofit organization that helps the visually impaired live fuller lives. Call right now to donate your car. And as a special thank you for calling, you'll receive a free 3-day vacation voucher to many exciting locations. Call Heritage for the Blind right now. Call 1-800-639-8620. Donating is easy, and your vehicle is towed away for free. Plus, you'll get a free vacation voucher. Call now, 1-800-639-8620. That's 1-800-639-8620.
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
Hello, welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Howell. We got Andrew on the board. S&P futures up 12. NASDAQ futures up 145. We got the Dow down, well, it's up 4, so not much going on in the Dow. We got IBM actually bouncing back a little bit today. It's up 3.6%. It's one, no, it's up 360. It's 1.7%. You can either say it's found a bottom, or you could say it's a dead cat bounce, whichever you want to say. And we got in regard to that one. Over in Asia, Nikkei up 1,000, that's 1.5%. We got the Hang Seng up 340, 1.4%. And we got the Shanghai down 11. Russell can give us one comment when we come back as to why Hang Seng and mainland have been going in different directions, seeming like every day. That's kind of weird. Over in Europe, DAX down 129.5%. FTSE down 4. Call that flat. CAC around up 2. Call that flat. So even though France lost, they're not selling stock. This is key. I think it's key. Bonds, the interest rates went down yesterday on the CPI number. They're already creeping back here today. I got the 10-year, maybe only up one, but the 30-year is back up 16 basis points. It's back over 5.1. So I don't know that CPI number yesterday is nothing more than a fleeting one due to the energy dropping for a week. Oil up 50 cents, 79.85. So I'm going to say oil's up $10, $11 since maybe that CPI number was calculated. Just saying. RBOB, 325, so it was under $3 2 weeks ago. So that's another quarter up easy. Gold down $24, 4,045, kind of stuck in the mid 4,000s here, mid 4,000 to 4,100. Not mid 4,000s is in 4,500. Silver down 72 cents, 58.75. Foreign exchange, and this has been kind of leading the bus. We still have got the dollar pretty strong at 114 with the euro. Not long ago that was 117. British pounds 134. Not as big a move there. A little while ago was 135.5, but here's the danger one. The yen is down again today, which means that the yen per dollar is up to 162.29. Anything over 160, and I saw a YouTube thing the other day about how they're planning on and are doing, they're selling U.S. assets, meaning U.S. bonds, in order to try and save their currency level. Danger for a country that owes everybody, meaning us. Bitcoin up 155 at 64,697, up maybe 4 or 5 thousand since the president said he loves Bitcoin, so that's interesting. Andrew, what do you got for us, Trevor, Weather Sports?
All right, it is 7:36 here in Chicago, Wednesday, July 15th. And yeah, just for sports here, spoilers for anyone who hasn't seen yesterday's MLB All-Star game just yet, cover your ears, but American League won over the National 4-0. For Chicago, weather is currently 80 degrees. We're going to have a high of 91 today. It'll be mostly sunny. We do have a dangerous heat warning. Over in Phoenix, they're currently at 93 degrees. They're going to have a high of 109. And on top of that, they're going to have some thunderstorms later this evening that can bring dangerous winds. And finally, for Chicago traffic, thankfully not looking too bad there today. Inbound Kennedy from Montrose is going to take you 24 minutes. Inbound Edens from Lake Cook is going to take you 38 minutes. Eisenhower from Wolf Road is going to take you 35. Dan Ryan from 95th is going to take you 20 minutes. And the inbound Stevenson from I-294 is going to take you 26 minutes. Back to you, Chief.
Hey, Russell, would you mind, before I ask you all those questions, since you and I, and certainly the last time Larissa was on, we were talking about young people and what their attitudes are. And Andrew was telling me last time I drove him in, you know, he goes, as one of those guys, I probably should have chimed in. And why don't we ask, if you want to, let's ask... Now, Andrew is a young guy who has his four-year degree, has a nice girlfriend who has her four-year degree, and they're both kind of in the arts. Matter of fact, the girl.
Now, the most important thing with the girlfriend on this show is she tracking his phone?
I don't know. Is she? You know,
that's an old Matt Weber thing where he found he lost his phone, and his girlfriend, the girlfriend at the time, was like, "Oh, I know where your phone is. I can track your phone. I turned it on." So sorry, Andrew.
Actually, no. Yeah, we do have that. Me and her.
By the way,
that's totally fine. I mean, I know where my kids are all the time.
Let the record reflect that he dumped her.
he dumped her, and it's okay if it's agreeable. He didn't. The thing was, Matt didn't know it.
Well, the big problem with that was she was on our softball team, right?
Oh, yeah.
And she played like college ball. It was a terrific second baseman. And Maddie's a pretty good player. He's, you know, a good center fielder. And so my brother goes, "Well, who are we going to pick? The all-star second baseman or Maddie?" I go, "I think we got to go with Maddie." He goes, "How are we going to replace her? We could replace him." How bad is that? Anyway, we stuck with Maddie.
Okay, so I will stop with the segues and allow Andrew to talk.
Well, I'm just saying we've talked a lot about people their age, and you know, I'm saying they're a couple. They've been together for a while. When if ever do they think they're in a house, they're walking to a new car showroom, or even more bizarre, having a little Andrew? I mean, Andrew, what is the status of people? You're 25-ish?
Yeah.
Okay, so what is the thought process?
Okay, so for me, I'm kind of biased in the negative direction of, like, I'm pretty pessimist when it comes to everything. But I'm definitely not alone in... I mean, I know very, very few people my age who really have any plans to own a house. Plenty of people own a car. I don't personally know because I live in the city, so I don't...
New cars or jalopies?
Yeah, jalopies.
Okay.
Like, I mean, genuinely, the only friend I know of that, he actually, he's done a lot at this point. He got a new car, got his own house, actually got married. He went to the Navy, like, straight out of high school.
Okay.
Obviously, you know, he made, like, a full career there, and he's done plenty already.
Did he get his degree there when he was there?
That I couldn't tell you. Maybe.
But he has some skill set. Obviously, he's got a pretty good job.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I believe he's at the naval base a little bit north of Chicago. Waukegan, is it?
Okay, so he's a consultant for the Navy now. That's good. That's a good deal. All right.
But I mean, other than that, you know, like you mentioned, you know, a lot of my friends are more interested in, like, the arts and stuff. You know, we're not really, like, business guys. But even I have a friend or two that are, and I mean, I had a friend who went from working at a pretty well, got out of college, went to a pretty well-off, not engineering, like a certain...
What a real firm.
Yeah, basically. But then, yeah, he did it for, like, half a year. He was like, "I don't like this," and then he left, and now he's working at Amazon. And
the girlfriend's doing... She's setting up a whole play or two plays, six, and then they're going to put them out in Michigan. Now, maybe they have a sponsor, maybe they sell tickets. But it's not... She's done it because she loves it, and if she gets a check, she's happy, basically.
Yeah, exactly. For the further context... my girlfriend is a stage manager for some local Chicago plays, and yeah, she recently got a gig out in Michigan that pays almost like 10 times in normal, not that much, like 6 times the normal amount. Stage managing is like you're basically doing it for free.
But now you're talking $3,000 instead of $500. We're not talking...
Yeah, exactly.
We're not talking $30,000.
Yeah, so it's still not, like, a career just yet, but, I mean, it's, you know, certainly a step in the right direction.
Russell, what do you think? Is that what you're seeing, or is that...
The one difference is that I deal with, you know, kids that are coming out of business school. There's a natural progression there. But I've been hearing, you know, the discouraging type stuff for some time. And it's generally, I don't know how to say this without sounding kind of, I almost feel like I get myself in trouble for this one. But I do interact more on a personal basis with male students than female students. part of it's there's just more male business students, and definitely more male students that want to major in finance. So it's just a function of what I teach. It's not that I'm not helpful to anybody that asks for help from me. I don't want it to come across the wrong way there.
Well, the adult
group, the reason I'm focused on the gender thing is the gender thing comes down to, guys don't want to get married. They have no desire to get married. We actually had this discussion in the Rhodes household the other day. My wife and I did. About, I think, you know, I feel like marriage has always been somewhat transactional. I don't know if the advent of OnlyFans and all that kind of stuff has made it even more obvious, but guys are starting to look at the transactional part of marriage, which leads to getting the house, having the kids, becoming a productive member of society, et cetera, the kind of households that you want to grow your country and all that kind of stuff. The guys don't even want to take that first step. And I've heard this from more than one guy. Why should I put myself in a situation where I'm going to have to give somebody half my stuff?
Yeah, well,
they're looking at it from the stuff standpoint.
I think that's your first thought
with respect to it's not, I'd rather not give away half my stuff. I'd rather keep all my stuff and spend the rest of my life alone. If you think about the opposite of that statement, but well, I don't know if the way that different groups have been, and I really do think that. Different groups have been pitted against each other for political purposes, and it's creeped over to the gender type thing where you almost have like a man versus woman thing.
Well, some of the nationalities are kind of have always been sort of different, Russell.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, 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 yeah. But
I know.
That's my. I'm seeing the same thing out of business students where, and I can remember. I remember this one night, I was about a month into working on the floor, and I was out with a bunch of guys and wasted out of my mind, and this one guy and I are just talking about how we're going to make a goddamn a fortune working at the exchange, and we're at the right place to be, and the world has never looked sunnier. He manages inventory at a CarMax now.
Yeah, well, it's
it's not particularly thrilled with how things have worked out for him.
Well, on the trading floor,
I don't see anybody totally jacked about the future when they're coming out of college like I was.
Well, if you were on the trading floor, the next day could be your oyster.
There was part of that, and that opportunity doesn't really exist anymore.
No. You're going to work for a firm forever in back office, although some people make all the money.
Yeah. Maybe that's part of it. Is this the? I started to say that you look around and the entrepreneurial thing just doesn't exist. But goodness gracious, we've had some entrepreneurs that have done quite well for themselves lately.
Well, you're not gonna. A lot of the stuff I talk about, and it's not just this administration. I mean. We talk about people doing cross currents, and I definitely want to get you to comment somewhere in here. We got time on the Japan situation, but where are you on the entrepreneurial side? I mean, we talk about AI and all those things a lot, and now you've got Meta? Or I don't know who it is. I don't think I shouldn't say that. It's one of these firms is putting up this $50 billion thing down in some parish in Louisiana. Right, so they're going to have how many thousand construction jobs, and the governor's all over it. Sounded like a buffoon in my mind. Well, he somehow gives these guys a 20-year break in sales tax.
Yeah.
Okay, so I guess that's fine. Mm-hmm. But what if? How do you and I, and all they do is talk about small business, mid-sized business, and everything they do is favor somebody bigger and either with money, but the interest rates being real low. By the way, I don't know if you listened yesterday, but Hell's starting his research again. He put on hold for do something else for a while regarding the banking regulations and the Fed moves and how it's absolutely eviscerated small business and smaller people, how it favors the people with money to such a tremendous amount that it's scary. And he's put those two things together, both the money supply and the banking laws, which I may have suspected, but now he's actually doing it, which is pretty cool. But just the inability, I mean, you and I think, in our life's work, sort of, I mean, obviously part of your life work is family and so forth, but the idea that our system here where you can go out and raise money, that's what the New York Stock Exchange is for. There is a bond market that you can access. Now all of a sudden, oh no, we're going to bring in some foreign money, which I don't have a problem with, but then we're going to give them all these benefits to get here. What does that do to the person here trying to figure out whether he should actually buy the property, build the plant, get the financing? I think it puts us as the part goes over the fence last. I mean, I'm getting that sense. I don't know if I'm right on that, which isn't this.
Well, you said foreign, and are you talking about us allowing other businesses from other countries?
Well,
to
I
do
mean,
things,
what did or? What did Trump was talking about some investment he's bringing in from Saudi Arabia with all these advantages? Well, okay, well, I'm not saying I don't want foreign money here.
Foreign money to come in,
but I don't want the president working the deal. I want the foreign guy to come here like everybody else. I mean, right?
See that's where you and I differ a bit because we're competing. Our biggest competitor is China. They have been for 20 years, and you know, I think everybody thought that they were gonna become business people and entrepreneurs, and then they were gonna end up being just like us and have a great middle class economy, and that is not how things have worked out at all, and. But they have, you know, poked some holes in our economy and competed in certain areas directly with us, and there are some things that I think they've won at, but the way that they did that was a coordinated central effort that was joint with government and companies, and if you're going to compete, you know, if we're competing globally, we've got to have government working with business. I've had this attitude for easily a decade. I was really excited when Trump got elected the first time, because you know, just because somebody that had some business experience in the White House, I wanted us to, you know, I want our federal government to be working with our large corporations to compete globally.
I don't have any problem with that. It's how it's done.
I know, and trust me, my excitement from 2016 is not the same as my. I'm still, you know, glad that he, you know, is supporting U.S. businesses.
Provided his kids have a piece of it.
Well, come on now, let's focus on that.
Well, but it's true.
Does he have a big piece in? You know, do they have a big piece in everything?
Well, I mean, I'm going to say that you and I will not go into the drone business. Right now,
no, we can't. I mean, actually, in the, you know, the problem is that you were talking about things being sold at a price that's less than they should have been. This one company, DJI, which is not allowed to sell any new drones in the U.S., was a Chinese company, and they were basically selling them at a loss so they could dominate that industry. But they also have all kinds of weird spyware and crap in their their drones.
Yeah. What the?
I had one. And some of the stuff that if you really started to dig into the settings and stuff, it was like sharing with their network, you know, just it was broadcast. It was sending things over the internet from my drone back to a network, and I couldn't really figure out where things were, why that was needed. I'm sure they loved getting data from me because I live kind of close to O'Hare.
Where do you come on the? This is a Milton Friedman question. Of course, you know. Mm-hmm. I'm sorry because a lot of times, every time you say something, immediately it hits a nerve that brings up yet another question. Which, by the way, that's why I love having you here. But
I got to stop with.
That's okay. But I mean, but it actually comes down to, because you know, you and I both have this horrible habit of connecting things. It comes down to the Bear, you know, it also has legs into the Bears Stadium in Indiana. Somebody asked Milton Friedman one day, because back in the, you know, in the 70s, a big thing was people dumping, you know, stuff here.
Yeah.
And Milton Friedman's comment on it, and he'd spent a while on it, because he was teaching a course he didn't like to teach, nobody wanted to learn. It had to do with theory of price, right, which is so complicated. Nobody wanted to hear it, and he didn't want to teach it. So anyway, it was nice, because you could get him off topic. And some guy asked him, what do you think about, like, dumping? And he goes, okay, let me walk it through. He goes, everybody just uses the one word. In fact, there's 18 different definitions to dumping. He said, if, for instance, the Japanese are selling cars here at full, quote, cost, and they just are willing to pay their CEO a hell of a lot less than here, he goes, that's not really dumping. That's that's competition. And we're paying the person here too damn much, because it's somewhat of a cartel. And if they want to break up the cartel, that's probably a good thing, because somebody here will be competitive, and that'll be okay. He said, but if somebody, say, in China wants to dump steel here at $10 a ton when it's really costing them 15, he goes, as long as you maintain your capability here, if somebody really wants to do that, let them do it. Let them break themselves and use the money for something else if somebody's dumb enough to do that. And, you know, but now here, of course, it kind of walks into the Bears Stadium. And I had a discussion the other night, you know, over a couple of cocktails, and there's four or five guys. Well, we got to keep the Bears. So I go, again, I'll paraphrase what Milton Friedman said, because I'm not a Nobel Prize winner. If Indiana is really dumb enough to give the Bears a $5 billion stadium, it's not incumbent on us to say, look what they're doing, we got to give them six. Let them do it. At some point, it becomes so ludicrous, you go, if they're dumb enough to do that and tax their people for $5 billion to build this thing for this one family in the NFL, let them do it. I'm not saying at some point you shouldn't help out a little bit, you know, with infrastructure or whatever.
Yeah.
But, by the way, on the same token, now that you got me going on this, did you see the headline yesterday about the soccer field on the South Loop?
No.
Well, we've talked, and I don't know if you were on, but I've actually done...
No, we've talked about it before.
Okay, so... And we've talked about the fact that is unimproved property. And you'd say, how the hell can something in the city be unimproved? The city, back in the 20s, straightened out the river. The river used to bend over all the way to Clark Street and come back.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, they straightened it out, and the idea was you're going to extend all these streets down there. It never happened. So for 100 years, this chunk of property between where the river now is and where the railroad tracks here close to Clark Street essentially is a big blob of nothing. There's no sewer, there's no electric, there's no gas, there's no anything. There's no water. It's totally unimproved. So that's why every time somebody's looked at it for a stadium or for anything else, people go, eh. I mean, everywhere else in the city, you could build something. And by the way, the water and everything's right in the street, right? But it's not there.
Yeah.
So now the city, these guys, for 2 years now, we've been hearing about how this guy is going to build this stadium at kind of all his own costs, with maybe a little bit of infrastructure thrown in from the city, which is fine with me. If it's going to be an L-stop there, there's a stadium, I'll do that. Guess what the number is? $450 million for the infrastructure for him to build this place. That's a little rich. That's a whole damn stadium, for God's sake.
Yeah. I mean, that you would think that you'd be able to build a stadium for $450.
No, this is just to get.
Oh no, I know it's just for the pipes.
Well, there's no roads. There's no roads there either. There's no roads.
I think I think they're going to do a TIF to pay for it. I don't know the details on that, but I've always been a fan of that, where you have a little bit of extra sales tax for the businesses that'll benefit from putting that soccer stadium there.
And who would that be?
I think that's how they're planning on paying for the infrastructure. We in Indianapolis, I was interviewed a few times on it, the local news about it. They're building a soccer stadium for the Indy 11, which is their soccer team, and they have a specific area where the minor league baseball park is, the where the Colts play, Lucas Oil Stadium, which we can call it Lucas Oil because it's not a FIFA event, and yeah, and they're putting the new soccer stadium in that same area, and there's a slightly there's a small like penny property tax, or not property tax, sales tax, that is going to fund what the city's you know, contribution was to that stadium.
I thought it was they sold bonds to get people financing cheaper. I don't think it had anything to do with sales tax.
No, well, you can sell. No, you can, but you can do that. But then if they are general obligation bonds of the city, the way that they're they're using municipal type bonds, you get a lower rate from that. But if you're using those, the revenue to make the coupon payments on those bonds and hopefully, you know, pay off the principal at some point, the revenue will come from a little bit of extra sales tax. I sound like a politician when I say a little bit, but it's like, you know, if if sales tax in Chicago is 8%, it might be 9% for some of the businesses close to the stadium.
I think you're I think you're right and not right. I think the stadium authority, both for the Soldier Field and for Sox Park,
mm-hmm.
they increased the sales tax, one of them on hotel taxes here and one of them on sales tax. I don't know which is which. They yeah. did that, but a regular TIF is just being able to pile into like the financing that the state would pay in terms of the taxes is not having federal tax on the bonds. Because
mm-hmm.
we had a, I don't know what the guy ended up doing with them, but if you get one of those bonds, you better plan on living for 30 years, because we had somebody, a new accountant at PTI, and he brought in some of these. It was a TIF area in Philadelphia, and I don't think they ever built anything there. It was a piece of crap, and the bid on the, I went to sell the guy's bonds. I have a, those that don't know, I have my municipal securities license, but that's not anything PTI really does. But a lot of times,
but you can do.
Well, I can, but I don't. Right. I'm saying if somebody comes in with one of those bonds, we can sell it. And more often than not, you get a pretty mm-hmm. decent, you get a pretty decent market if it's a, if it's a city of Chicago bond or something. Russell, the market on this TIF was 40 bid at 90. Mm-hmm. And finally, I said to the guy, you just got to hang on to this. I mean, plus it was, you know what? Remember how Instanet used to be back in the day? I finally found a firm, I don't know where I went to find somebody that would offer it, right? I go, the guy's willing to sell it at like 80. The guy goes, all right, well, we're going to offer it at 82. And I go, we're offered at 80. Oh, no, if we sell it at 82, we'll buy him from him at 80. And I'm going, well, that's very generous. Remember that's how over the counter stack used to be. Well, remember how it's way over the counter stack used to be, but it's not anymore. All right, tell me about what's going on with Japan. One of the things that one of my huge criticisms of the current administration is somehow or another they're not looking at the people we owe money to, and they seem mm-hmm. to be totally willing and able to piss off the people that are essentially financing us, and they're willing to throw tariffs on countries that have, if they have a trade advantage, have used the trade advantage to buy our friggin' bonds. And I don't get why Trump and his people don't find a 2-and-2 problem there. But all of the stuff with the oil in the middle, what do you agree with the war, don't agree with the war, it's caused some people some problem in terms of being able to afford it. And I think one of the countries, and again, this is a question for you, that is having the biggest problem with that is Japan, because not only do they have to pay the higher oil price, they now have to convert their yen to dollars to pay for oil, because that's the currency for oil. So
they're one of the few countries that's become more oil dependent over the past decade or so because of the Fukushima thing.
Well,
so it has a bigger impact on them.
They're getting it in both ends, basically.
Yeah, they're getting it a lot, and demographically, they've got issues. You know, here's a nice hot button issue for you. You know, they're over a third of their population is like retirement age or in their mid-60s or older now, and they don't do immigration in China.
In Japan.
I'm sorry, God, that was just awful, wasn't it? Can we?
Is that a Freud? Is that a Freud?
Can you pull that out? But they don't do immigration in China either.
No.
So the statement I made was correct. It was just about the wrong place. But they don't do it. They don't do immigration there. It's it's very difficult. So, and I do think to demographically grow a country, you do need to have some sort of controlled immigration if you want your economy to continue to grow, if you're not doing it through births. And they've got a shortage of blue collar workers over there like we do here.
But my point is,
everybody wants to go to college and go work at an office, and they've been a no inflation environment forever.
Yeah, until recently.
Yeah, I mean, but recently prices have started to go up a bit, and in conjunction of all of that, they're we talk about our debt as a percent of GDP. It's a little over 100 now, I think.
It's like 130. It's up to.
Yeah, Japan's is 250.
Yeah.
Now, I never had a problem with all of these teetering things with Japan, because they seem to have a nice functioning society where people seem to be doing okay.
Well, started the show by saying, I don't necessarily want to listen all day long to people telling me how well I'm doing,
Yeah, but I actually do think that, they had like it seemed to me that they had a really cool homogeneous society. People seemed to be happy living there. And that goes completely outside the numbers.
Well, our contributor,
we're not seeing a whole lot of economic growth, and we're not seeing a lot of we're not seeing any inflation at all. But our people are kind of happy and happy with their lives. That's the way that I always viewed Japan.
Well, John Lee's been going there.
I wonder if the happiness part's getting ready to become an issue.
Well, John Lee's been going there he's been Singapore. He was over there. He's been 20 years back and forth. That's where his career's been. He's been to Japan, a million times. Well, a lot of times. Mm-hmm. And he said the last time he was there, he never saw. He's every place you went, all people were doing is complaining. You're right. They had no inflation forever. Well, now they got some, and nobody's gotten a raise. So it's hitting them right where.
Oh gosh, no.
It's hitting them right where the sun. But what I'm saying is, I hope that somebody in the White House would realize that we owe them almost $1 trillion. They're our big investor, and if we're forcing them, not maybe on purpose, but if we're forcing them to a situation where every single month they're selling U.S. Treasuries to prop up their yen, who exactly is going to make up? And by the way, the other country that's made up a big of the difference with China kind of bailing out on us. Is UK, and all we do is insult those guys. I mean, what are?
Yeah,
I mean,
and the UK's economy has a lot of it. The Brexit thing hasn't worked as well as they'd hoped it would, but all of Europe is kind of in a quagmire for a lot of reasons right now. So I don't know if they'd be better off if they hadn't done Brexit.
We got a dasher, but I guess the thing that is getting me where the sun don't shine here is I listen to people, and they'll even in conversation, they'll go, screw Europe. UK's letting in all these migrants. They're doing this. Screw them. Guys, we owe them $850 billion. Before you say screw them, at least know that, by the way, they've been huge investors here. Nobody seems to get that at all. To me, there's a connection. Maybe I'm the only one. I don't know.
No, there most definitely is a connection. And we don't want, We don't want our friends to be overly hurt. I think part of what Trump was hoping would happen is that other countries, once the Strait of Hormuz became an issue, was that other countries would maybe help step up and help make sure oil could get out of there, and nobody else has stepped up.
Well.
Because, I know we've never, nobody ever thinks this about Trump, but he's not quite the coalition builder that people think he could be.
Oh, God. Well, I mean, if I'm in Europe, I'm going to say we're the ones that closed it.
laughing at my own joke. We are the ones that closed it.
Anyway, so, it by the way, are you here? Are you in Indianapolis? What are you, summer school? What are you doing?
I am in. So the attic of our house was blown out and turned into a man room, the house we just moved into. So I am at what I refer to as the lookout.
Well, I hope the
I
same
hang out in the lookout all the time in Illinois.
I hope that the same thing doesn't happen to you to my friend Dak. I'll just say his first name, not Dr. J. Because yeah, I spent all his money on my man cave, and the first day the door opened, the kids came in, and there they were.
Well, my kids they don't live here anymore.
Well, now is the dog allowed in the man cave?
I've got two dogs laying on top of me right now.
God love you.
That's how I do the program.
Hey, whatever happened to the
where I am when I do the program? It's
whatever happened to the blind guy you used to watch once in a while?
The reason we watched him was because the family that I forgot what that dog's name was, but it was a couple here in the Chicago area whose son played. For Minnesota, played for the college.
Okay,
played football, and when they would go to games, we would take. I cannot remember that dog's name, but he's not on the football team anymore, so they don't need people to do that.
Okay, well, he seemed like he was a good little guy.
Oh, it was not a little guy. It was like a 50-pound, just gigantic, fat French bulldog.
Oh, so he was kind of a big fat.
The most pleasant dog ever.
All right, bud, you take care of yourself and. When you talk to Larissa, say she give us a half hour every 3 weeks, it'd be perfect because she gives us a perspective that nobody else does.
I will let her know you said that.
Plus, on a personal level, I really like her.
I'm well aware.
Okay, all right, bud. Take care of yourself. SP Futures up 20, NASDAQ Futures 182. Back tomorrow, Stocks and Jacks.
That's all, folks.